Welcome to Defining Roles, a podcast about jobs you may have never heard of. I'm your host, Kate Barrett. Let's explore the possibilities of what's out there so that we can find our perfect role. Hello, I am so happy you're here. Today I have Shaney Silver, who is a writer and podcaster on, and Shaney is known for her work that is changing the narrative around single life. When content is created for single women, it's largely dating advice, which isn't that helpful or interesting. On Shaney's podcast, a single serving podcast, guests range from solo travel, financial strategists, comedians, female entrepreneurs, and well, so much more because the space is anything but limited. And today, Shaney and I talk mostly about her career as a writer and the new model she's using for podcasting. We recorded this episode at the end of 2020, right before she mixed things up with how she provides her weekly episodes. So we get to hear about that right before it launched. We also hear today about her advice for writers that want to start being paid to write professionally, how she handles creativity blocks, and she breaks down the phenomenon of window shoppers in your life and what you can do about them. The links to Shaney's website and Instagram are in the show notes, so definitely head over and check out more of her work there. I have gone down to releasing 2 episodes a month instead of 1 every week, and I am finding this to be much more manageable, and I'm enjoying the whole process so much more. So I hope that you don't miss the weekly episodes too much, and that you're still happy listening twice a month. With that, let's head over to the interview with Shaney Silver. All right, Shaney, thank you so much for joining me on Defining Roles today. I'm very excited for our conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, my first question, what is your official job title?
Well, since I give it to myself, it tends to change, but I think at the moment I'm most comfortable with writer and podcaster.
Beautiful. How would you define your role?
Oh my goodness. Well, thankfully these days it's a very long definition. It used to be, you know, I am the director of digital content for X, Y, and Z publication, or I am the director of copy and messaging for this startup company, something like that. It used to be really easy to define, and it used to be continuously climbing in status and stature, and it was also continuously climbing in misery. So now that I work for myself and I get to determine what I do and how I do it and all of the different things that I do, I'm a lot happier, but it takes a lot longer to explain what my job is. So I would say right now, the way that I have sort of established my profession is that I create content either written in the form of essay, most often humor essay, because that's sort of my space. I do that, and I also create a podcast. And I've been writing on a variety of different topics for years and years, but I would say the work that I'm most known for at the moment deals with single life and changing the narrative around single life, because I think singlehood in general has just had such a terrible stigma attached to it, such terrible societal shame attached to it. And in my opinion, it's really not deserved. And it's especially not deserved during the modern dating age where, you know, societal shame is still there, but it's not taking into account how difficult dating has become. And I didn't see a lot of fairness or honesty in that space. So I wanted to make it a more positive place, and I wanted to create work that made people feel better about their single lives. So that's a lot of the work I do. And then I'm also just a humor essayist on any topic that I want to write about. I sort of take the written version of stand-up comedy. It's very observational, and anything that I find ridiculous or perplexing or infuriating, I tend to write about. And so my work appears all kinds of places. And most of the time these days, it appears on Medium or my website. And yeah, my podcast is called A Single Serving Podcast, and I publish it every Monday.
Oh, man, you have found such a great niche. And I love that it's one of the few voices that has the positive spin, which is what really drew me to your work and the humor of just being able to laugh at ourselves in situations instead of getting all worked up about them. And I mean, there are times where we get worked up, but I think on most days, if you can look at a situation and see it with fresh eyes and then laugh, everything gets a little easier.
It does. And it was really important to me to be very intentional with my humor, because I see a lot of humor in the single space that is actually made at our expense. And because when you think about it, there's nothing funny about a dick pic. There's nothing funny about, you know, being ghosted. There's nothing funny about the struggles of dating life, but they're always turned into these jokes about how rough it is now or how bad it is now. That's not funny to me, because somebody had to experience that before it could be a meme. Mm-hmm. And that experience wasn't a good one. So I try to, you know, steer my humor away from that negative joke at our expense sort of space and bring it into a more positive light. I think there is an assumption that's made about single people in that we are in on the joke. I think single life is seen as something that is temporary. I think the way people think about the singles in their lives, they think, oh, well, you know, she must want a boyfriend. She must want a husband. She's fixing this. She's on it. She's working on it. So she's in on the joke if we make fun of her singlehood, because she doesn't want to be this thing. So it's fine. But it's not fine, because, yeah, a lot of us are looking for partnership, myself included. We would love partnership, many of us. But, yeah. You know, what if that doesn't come for years and years and years and years and years? How long do we have to be the butt of this joke? In my opinion, never, but I think society's going to take a little while longer to convince.
Yeah. And I love one of the first messages I heard you speak on is that being single isn't a disease that needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. It is a place that is filled with so many positives and joys, and that gets brushed over. And then it's the struggles that are highlighted, especially when it's the butt of the joke or the thank goodness I'm not in that situation anymore. But yeah, you're just taken aback, and you're the one that gets to decide what I will allow in the conversation and to see different things. And I know I see reality TV differently. A lot of the shows that are popular, not that I'm into them, but I kind of can see why they maybe were not appealing or irked me before. And that's just through observation that I've heard from your work.
Yeah, I think single people are modern day gladiators. I think that reality TV just puts singles, especially lots of different kinds of people, certainly married people too, but the way that single people are sort of used in the reality dating space is pretty gross to me. The situations that singles will be put in, the things that will be asked of single people, all under the guise of, you know, the pursuit of partnership, I think it's pretty cruel. And I get that people who are on reality TV have volunteered themselves for this opportunity, but it hurts to know that single people are watching, and these are the messages that they're receiving and the things that they're sort of taking in. It just never really felt like a positive space for me. It felt like, you know, we can do whatever we want to single people. They don't have anybody yet. I've made the comparison, you know, a million times. Like there have been for decades countless shows about like dating shows and, you know, things in Bachelor Nation, stuff like that, that, you know, will put single people through just anything. But there would never be a show on reality TV about like parents all vying to adopt one child.
Yeah.
Like that would never happen because couplehood and parenthood is seen as sacred. It's seen as something that you respect. And there just isn't that level of respect for singles who want love and partnership, two things that I think are just as valid and just as worthy of respect as becoming a parent. But we treat these things differently and we center and prioritize people in pairs. And I just don't see a lot of sense in that. So that's where a lot of my work lies.
Shani, how did you find your niche and how did you get connected with your audience? And maybe if we take this a step back, like how did you get started in freelance writing and start to get paid for your writing?
Sure. The easiest way to say how I started getting paid for my writing was to stop writing for free. I think that is the, if I can say one thing to anyone who is a freelance writer, whether it's full-time freelance or on the side freelance, if you are listening and you are a writer, stop writing for free immediately. That's how you get paid to write, is when you stop accepting work for free. There's a bad habit in the writing space about not paying writers. And if a publication wants your work so much that they'll publish it, that means that they need it. They won't pursue things they don't need. And if somebody is, you know, pursuing your work and wants to publish your work on their site where they're running advertising and they're making money, there is absolutely no reason why you should not be paid for that work. So yeah, stop writing for free and then you will start getting paid to be a writer. But it's also about like looking at the resources you have at your disposal. A huge one, if you are a writer, is Medium. Medium is an amazing space for freelance writers at any stage of their career to write whatever they want, whenever they want, and earn money doing it. And so I do a ton of writing on Medium, but that was, I mean, that's more of the like modern day how I'm earning a living as a writer. I would say in the beginning, when I stopped accepting work for free, which sounds even like bizarre, when I stopped allowing myself to write for free and I started only saying yes to jobs that were compensating me fairly, more of the same tended to follow. And I could start to see that the world wouldn't end if I stopped writing for free, that I could continue to do what I loved if I, you know, recognized that it was worth being compensated for. So that's kind of how that started. But it also, it took lots and lots of time. I have been writing as a side hustle for, my gosh, I mean, maybe 9 or 10 years, and I've only been completely independent and freelance for the last 2 years. So it was a big, long transition to recognize that this is the space that I really need to be in. So I don't want anyone to think that this is like an overnight transition. It took a decade, but yeah. I'm glad that I did it.
Beautiful. Yeah, that was my main question is you see freelance writers, but it is, I don't know if competitive is the right space, but it's, I don't know that the training is as clear. I mean, I feel like writing is something that you can, yes, improve on, but I think you're one of those people that talk about it's just kind of been in your blood since you were young and it's just something you feel you need to do. And so it's, you know, people that want to write a blog post, I think there's such a different spectrum of what it means to write because the bar to entry or the ability to get your writing out there is so low that finding a way to distinguish yourself and have it find its best match can be tricky.
Oh, for sure. There's a lot of trial and error, but I think if you are a writer, you know it. If writing lights you up, if it's something you enjoy, you'll keep doing it and you'll find the space that works best for you. It might not be overnight or it might be overnight. I don't know. But if you love doing this, just keep doing it would be what I would say. But I think in my case, it also has a lot to do with talent. I enjoy it. I enjoy that this is my talent. I have been a writer my entire life. And it's the gift about myself that I love the most. And I want to keep using it forever. And for many, many years, I denied it. I didn't think that I could be a writer because the message I'd always received was that writers don't make money. And if you don't make money, you know, in my family where I come from, that was a shameful thing. So I couldn't be a writer because then my family would be ashamed of me. They wouldn't be proud of me, which is not the case at all. They're very proud of me. But you know, that was what I thought. That was what I grew up with. So it was not just knowing and loving that I had this talent. It was actually living it also. And I think when I started to align those things is when things started to get more possible for me.
What are some of the hard versus soft skills that you use in your role? So what's come through training and learning versus things you're innately good at, like writing?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's ever evolving. I feel like there will always be new skill sets added to the fold. So I would say writing comes really naturally to me, but I also think it's a talent that I've developed over time. Like, it's really hard for me to go back, you know, 6 or 7 years and read something that I wrote. I can't even stand it because I've just like developed in ability since then. But I think something that was less natural, that I was really nervous and self-conscious about, that I've had to really develop my skill set over time, is interviewing people on my podcast. I had no idea if I was going to be any good at it. And I enjoy it very much. So I know that I should keep doing it. Even if I'm not amazing at it, I love it. So I know I should keep going. And I sort of taught myself how to level up that skill set by using something else that I already know how to do. So for example, I write my entire interview out in great detail. And it goes to my guest in the form of a brief, so they know everything that I'm going to ask them. But it also helps me make sure that I don't forget anything, that I don't get nervous, or that I don't get flustered or ask a question in the way that I didn't intend to. So I use one existing skill set to prepare me to get better at the other, which has been a huge, huge help to me. And then there will always be things that are just out of my realm of, like, not even ability, but things that are just not authentic to me. Like, I'm really not good at overhead, like any sort of like solo proprietor overhead. I'm just not a big fan of. It's not something that I enjoy. So I have tools that I use to make sure that I can delegate as much of that away from me as possible. Like, for example, hiring an accountant is the best thing I've ever done for myself. It was just the biggest weight off of my shoulders that I could do what I loved and trust that I had somebody who knew what they were doing to handle the stuff that I don't like so much.
That is the thing about freelance work, is it's you wear all of the hats and you have all of these different roles. I mean, you're the one finding guests and scheduling guests. You're the one, you know, writing and meeting deadlines. And then you're the one that's the accountant and HR and all of the different hats that you need to know enough to get things right, that makes the freelance world so challenging.
Yes, it really is. But it's still worth it. Like, I think, if you're meant to be freelance, I think you'll know it when you recognize how much more you like your life as a freelancer as opposed to in a more traditional work setting.
It's just the trade-off. But I mean, having the freedom to create your own schedule and decide what you will and will not work on definitely, you know, is worth that little extra work.
Absolutely.
Shani, last year there was an interview, or I think you were interviewing one of your friends. I can't remember exactly which episode it was, but you were talking about how much growth you had experienced that year and where you were at in your journey as a single person and having this growing community of listeners that would come and maybe be newly single or just at a different point on their journey. And you talked about how you had to address where they were at in a loving way, but also go, we're not still there. How much of your content do you create specifically for your listeners compared to where you're at and what you're interested in?
I think it's always going to be an ever-moving balance. I think it's always going to be a puzzle that's constantly shifting, because as a content creator, I want to create the content that lights me up and that matters to me, and trust that the right audience for me will connect with that content. I never want to create things from a mindset of, oh, what are they going to like? What's going to get me more followers? What's going to do this or that or whatever? No, like, what am I passionate about? What lights me up? That's what I'm going to make. But then, you know, as the audience grows, I want to make sure that I'm still serving it. I want to make sure that like I give them what they need. And I just do that by checking in with them, like, you know, just asking and making myself available to their questions and comments, to their guest suggestions, things like that. Some of my favorite guests have been suggested to me by audience members. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely always a balance, but I start from a place of loving what I create and trusting that the right audience for me will connect with it as well.
Because that's, for me, I'm freshly entering the space with kind of new eyes and still discovering where's my niche and what is this that's growing and building. And so knowing that a big part of what I do is I want to be able to be of service to people and then also find where are my unique gifts and where are my talents. So knowing how to blend the two, does that just take time?
Oh, yeah. It does take time, and it's time that I'm very grateful for. I think the more you can see come from the benefit of time, the less likely you will be to rush yourself. It took many, many years of me writing about like relationships and dating for me to come to a place where I was like, no, I don't want to just complain about how much this sucks anymore. I want to change it. There has to be more to my work than just complaining about how horrible dating and being single is. Why don't I do more than that? Why don't I change it? And so that's how I started writing more productive and positive content. And I saw that when I did that, it felt better. People paid attention to it more. There was more success for me in that space than there had been in other spaces. So it definitely took time. It took time for me to figure out what mattered to me and what I wanted to do, but it happened very naturally and very organically. There wasn't a moment where I like forced myself into one space. The space kind of revealed itself to me over time.
Amazing. So the podcast you've been doing for about 2 years, correct?
Yeah, it'll be 2 years at the beginning of April.
Congratulations. That is so exciting. And you've built such a community. It's been fun. I've found you, I think it was a little over a year ago, but it's been so cool to see the changes and the growth and all of the things that have happened within that community. It's been really fun.
I have loved it. It's kind of insane my favorite part is the meetups. There have been meetups in 16 cities all over the world. And that for me is incredible because that's single people who didn't know each other before, who know each other now. And who have new friends now, which I think is just one of the biggest, it's one of the biggest things for single people is connection with other human beings. It can be really tough, and being single can feel really isolating. So for people to get together and meet and become friends was just the greatest thing for me to hear.
That's so cool. Would you talk for a second about your creative cycles? So I've kind of experienced the highs and the lows, and you get a big project out or something maybe doesn't happen the way that you expect. Have you found a rhythm to your creative cycle?
It doesn't flow in like a cycle that makes any sense to me. But what I do is I recognize when it's not flowing and I don't force it. If I am burnt out or exhausted, I take a break. If I'm feeling really creative and productive, I will keep going. I'm just learning to be really to have my ears open and to recognize what I need and when I need it. And to also trust that like, if I don't feel super creative right now, that doesn't mean I'm going to feel out of sync with my creativity forever. It's temporary and everything comes back around. So I'm very good at listening to what I need in the moment and what I'm able to do in the moment. And if I find myself forcing any kind of creativity whatsoever, I just walk away from it. And I recognize that the world will not fall apart if I walk away from something for an afternoon. Like, it's really going to be fine. It's okay.
Do you find that there are things that maybe can just help you get into the zone versus it's not flowing at all today?
Well, time is the best medicine. Just walking away and focusing on other things or resting I would say that time is the best cure for it. And the more I do that, the more I sort of like listen to what I need and what I don't need in the moment, the quicker creativity comes back. So I haven't really had to use too many like tricks or crutches or anything.
Yeah.
I've found that like focusing on mediums that are different from the ones that I create within, like if I can't write in the moment, I'm not going to go read a bunch of content or read a book. If I'm having trouble with the podcast, I'm not going to go listen to 50 of them. I'm going to listen to music or watch a movie or be outside for a while. There really isn't anything that I can do to orchestrate my own creativity. Like it's it just has to come, and it always does. And the more you can train yourself to remember that it always comes back, the more calmly you will move through those periods of sort of like a quieted creativity.
I love that. The shifting focus and just use a different part of your brain or have something completely disconnected.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Another part of the cycles or of working on different projects in what's unique to being single is not having a built-in cheerleader. How do you approach self-motivation or when you have a big success, how are you your own cheerleader? How do you fill that space of not having someone that's always right there seeing all of your work?
I'm not one of those people that needs it. I'm not super reliant on other people to motivate me. Like the idea of a personal trainer at the gym gives me hives. Like you have to be kidding. Like somebody like coaching me along on a treadmill, I could not deal with it. Like there's just no way. It's wonderful for you if that works for you, but that is not who I am. I would say the harder moments are the really celebratory ones. Where you would like somebody to celebrate with, but you don't have that. And then even for that, I've had to really learn how to fully celebrate those highs for myself and to, you know, fully live them for myself. Because if you think about it, like even when you have some giant professional win, no one, no matter how close they are to you, will fully, it will never mean as much to them as it does to you ever. Yeah. Like that's an impossibility. You know what I mean? They're never going to be you. You're the only person that this can mean that much to. So like if you can only fully celebrate if you have someone else next to you that doesn't fully get it because they're not in your brain, that just doesn't seem right to me. There's like that old saying, this would mean nothing without someone to share it with, is so toxic. It's so toxic because it completely diminishes the accomplishments of single people. And it also puts a shade on the accomplishments of people in couples as well. It's like, why do you need something outside of yourself to celebrate something you yourself did? Like it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I've also had the benefit of being single for 13 years, so I've gotten pretty good at this because I've had a lot of practice. And of course, I'm very lucky to have friends and family who are always happy for me when I am happy for myself. So that is, I'm very lucky in that way. But I have more fear of missing out on joy than I do like the fear of missing out on my own joy because I'm not allowing myself to celebrate fully just because I don't have someone. I'm so afraid of that. I don't ever want to be that person. I don't want to deny myself joy simply because I don't have a partner. So I'm pretty motivated to fully celebrate the highs of my life. And I'm also really motivated to learn how to weather the lows. Because I don't ever want my life to shine less brightly because I don't have someone else in it. That just seems unfair to me.
Absolutely. What has been the most recent joy that you've celebrated?
Oh my goodness. Well, 2020's been a doozy.
oh yeah.
I would say, you know, and I don't know that we're thinking about this enough as a group of people, but to have survived a year of a global pandemic, to be able to pay my rent, to have remained healthy, to have stayed authentic in my work. I haven't gone back to that old way of life that I had to leave in order to be who I'm meant to be. I haven't gone back to that. I could have. Yeah. I really could have, but I've done the opposite. I've said no to opportunities to go back to work that I can't stand so that I could stay in my worth in work that I love, because I know that that's what I deserve. And that's an incredibly privileged position to be in. And I've been able to do it during this incredibly, unfathomably difficult year. So celebrating that, I mean, it's a miracle. It's an absolute miracle. This has been the hardest year I've known in my lifetime, and many people have known in their lifetimes. And to celebrate, you know, weathering that very, very well, I would say, is a huge accomplishment for me.
Yeah. And you still have a smile on your face. I can just hear it in your voice. And that alone is like, we're not just showing up, but we're here. We're here and we're feeling it, the highs and the lows, and we're here for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a way to respect everything that everyone has been through this year, and to still, you know, you don't have to minimize your joy and you don't have to minimize your accomplishments. Just the opposite. I think we should hang on to it because we're not out of the woods yet, right? And we're going to need it. So hang on to every ounce of joy that you have and don't feel bad about it either. We're all doing our best. We've all been trying to do our best during a really difficult time. And I think that's something to be proud of.
Absolutely. Would you share what you do have going on next, and you're just about to launch? Because not only have you really stuck to the work that you've been doing, like you said, you didn't have to go back to maybe some old opportunities and you've let things pass by, but you're working on something pretty cool in a new model that I think is fantastic.
Sure. I'm happy to share. So I am changing the way that I publish my podcast in 2021. And for anyone who's unfamiliar with the podcasting space, places like Apple Podcasts and Spotify and Stitcher are remarkable in that anyone who wants to create a podcast can create a podcast. Literally anyone. You don't even have to buy a microphone. You can record into your laptop. Like, there's just the access to these platforms is open. And I love that. I love how much room for creativity that provides. I really like that anybody who has something to say can say it. I really love and respect that capability. At the same time, part of that group of anyone includes famous people. And the difference between audience share in, you know, from somebody who's starting from scratch like I did versus somebody who already has fame and an audience attached to them, it can be impossible to get things like advertising and other things that help you get compensated for the work that you do when you've made podcasting, you know, part of your profession. And so I was looking at my numbers for the last 2 years of podcasting, and while they've steadily grown, you know, it was really clear that for me to achieve a level of not even competitive with the big podcasts, but like to achieve at a level where I could even get any advertising at all, it was going to be several more years before I could organically grow that way. And I had already been organically growing for 2 years, and I just couldn't really, I mean, I don't know anybody that could work for like 4 or 5 years without getting paid and still want to keep going.
Right.
So yeah, it didn't make sense to me. So the models that were in place for podcast advertising revenue were not going to be serving me. So I wanted to create a model that did serve me. And I'm very lucky that platforms like Patreon exist that allow me to do that. So I've had a Patreon for the last 14 months or so. I launched it in October of 2019. And so I've decided that in 2021, I will publish one episode of my podcast per month to all of the free access platforms that everyone's used to, like Apple Podcasts and Stitcher, Spotify, all of that. But then every other weekly episode within that month will only be available via Patreon. So what that does is it connects my audience and me through Patreon so that I can be compensated for the work that I'm doing. And I know that the audience that's listening to those episodes on Patreon, that's my audience. Like, that's who's really benefiting from this work. That's who feels better after listening to my podcast. I know that for sure. Yeah. So that's how things are going to change so that I can start generating revenue from the podcast so that I can keep making the podcast, because it does take, I mean, you know this, it takes a lot of time every week to generate a podcast. And I want to keep going forever. And in order to do that, I had to put some sort of compensation structure in place that made sense. And I like the nature of Patreon, where the cost for, you know, the casual audience member can be really low, but because it's a collective of people, it's going to be something that can be supportive for me as a creator.
It's such a great idea. And I, when you were explaining it in one of the recent podcast episodes, that this change is coming and that the entry point is $5, which anybody, absolutely anybody, can do $5 for something that brings them value. That's one latte.
Right.
But that the point going with that is that people also respect what they pay for. Mm-hmm. And so I think the level of personal investment that people have in creating a supportive, positive community, like you said, you're going to find the people that are where you at, where you're at, and that share in that same level of commitment and appreciation.
Absolutely. And it just also, it makes you a more conscious consumer of content as well. Like I've, since I started my Patreon, I've become a patron of the like creators that I go to most often. I've signed up for far more memberships to things that I consume regularly to the extent that I can. Like for example, New York Times cooking. I was noticing that I was going to so many recipes on New York Times every month and I couldn't see most of them because they were behind the paywall. And instead of getting frustrated, I was like, why don't I just pay for this? Like I can just pay $5 a month and get this thing that intrigues me over and over and over again and that I get a lot of use out of. And now I do, and it's the best $5 ever. If you are a home cook or you enjoy cooking at all, or you want to get better, it's an easy $5 for me because I get so much back from it.
I think we just need to be retrained because everything's free. And so then we get worked up when it's not free. But like you said, just imagine if you started paying for the things that matter. And then if on the other side, you decide this doesn't matter to me anymore, you can change. It's not a lifetime commitment. It's for as long as you value it.
Exactly. That's exactly it. I think we have been trained by the internet to consume everything for free. And that was from, you know, the first days of the internet to present. And that's a bad habit because it does cost money to create things. It costs time. It you know, asks a lot of someone's personal skill sets and their knowledge base. And for creators to share that, we're allowed to have multiple motivations for that. Like, obviously, I want to help the single community feel better because I'm really tired of seeing single people shamed by society and made to feel really small and really low for the simple fact that they haven't met their partners yet. Like that's ridiculous. And I'm going to continue fighting that no matter what, but to continue fighting it in podcast form where so much of my time is taken and I know I'm delivering good content because I get feedback about it all the time. For me to be able to keep going, I do need the support of my audience and I don't see anything wrong with that, nor do I see anything wrong with any creator who's really delivering value, asking for support from their audience too.
Well, and the quality of your work just goes up because you're feeling good that you're compensated and you can focus on creating the content because you're not already exhausted from doing things that will pay you that drain you.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, in the freelance space, I have a million jobs that we haven't gotten into. Like I teach classes for entrepreneurs who are building their own businesses. I teach messaging classes on that. There are so many things that I do that I love doing. But I love serving this audience the most. And so I want to be able to give it the lion's share of my attention. And this is how I'm going to be able to do that.
Beautiful. Where do you see podcasting going in the future? Do you think more podcasts or creators will follow a similar model? Or do you hope to see that?
I don't know. I'm so curious, actually. I really don't know. I think in general, content creation is going to have to go more toward the way of creators being directly compensated for it. Because advertising in the space, burns out quickly. It gets, yeah. I mean, you listen to podcasts with, it feels like half of the podcast is ads.
It's not fun. I don't enjoy it.
No, I don't either. And it's like, how many Casper mattress ads can I listen to? I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, it's just too much. So I think in general, we're going to get more comfortable with paying for what we consume. Mm-hmm. And I think with podcasts only growing in number, eventually there's going to have to be something like Netflix for podcasts. At some point, there will have to be some consolidation. The way that, you know, there's a Spotify or there's a Netflix, there will probably have to be that with some sort of paid component for podcasts. And I think the space will only grow, and I'm excited to see how it continues to grow and what happens. But yeah, I don't know. Future prediction is not my strength, but I can tell you that this medium, this podcasting medium, will absolutely continue to grow because it's so creative and inspiring, and anyone can do it. I love that. I love that anyone can make a podcast if they want to.
I think it's like having Hulu no ads or Spotify without the ads. I am happy to pay a few extra dollars if I don't have that, you know, extra talking in my ear, and it's just strictly the content that I care about. So
yeah,
well, I hope to see that creators move in that direction, because I am so willing to put my money there personally.
Same here. It's perfectly fine and good to pay for what you enjoy consuming. I think that's the way it should be.
I'm just going to touch real quickly on a recent episode that you did in the solo space, because along with observing the culture, I thought that this point that you made was so interesting on window shopping.
Yes.
And all of the terms that the single space, you know, there's ghosting, there's zombies, there's all these things. But I had never had anyone observe or pick up on window shopping. Would you share that with the audience?
Oh, I'd love to. One thing that I will preface it with, the modern dating landscape, particularly online dating landscape, loves to come up with charming little terms for what people do, like ghosting or breadcrumbing or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the way that these items are presented is most typically like, here, straight women who are dating straight men on dating apps, here are things to look out for. It's never, hey, straight men doing these things to straight women, stop doing these things.
Yeah.
That's never the message. And if that's not going to be the message, I'm going to have to put out one of my own that I feel very strongly about, and I'm not going to name a behavior without also offering a solution to it.
Yeah.
So window shopping, simply put, is anyone you have ever been talking to on a dating app, texting, maybe you've been out on a date or two, anyone that you've had any kind of contact with in a potentially romantic way, but nothing ever actually happened. If those people still look at all of your Instagram stories, that's a window shopper. That is the definition of a window shopper. You know who they are. You have them. Perhaps you window shop others. Stop doing that. But that's what window shopping is. And I despise it. I hate it so much because I mean, you and I both do Lacey Phillips work.
Yeah.
So we understand identifying things in our lives that are serving us and things that are not serving us. And I've had to clear out so much in the last like 2 years of my life that was not serving me. And seeing people who don't really want to give me the time of day, but who are more than happy to have a window into my life that they use on the regular, I couldn't live with that anymore. So I asked myself, like, why was I allowing it? Why was I allowing window shopping to happen? And it was a really low worth answer. My answer was, oh, I just wouldn't want anybody to be offended if I blocked them. I was worrying about someone maybe being offended that I blocked them more than I was worrying about me definitely being offended that they view all my Instagram stories but don't say hello to me ever. So I blocked all of my window shoppers. They're all gone. And it felt so good to claim agency over who has access to me and who does not. And that led to all kinds of behaviors that put me in the driver's seat of who has access to me. I stopped feeling guilty for blocking people that sent me messages that I didn't feel good about, or, you know, any kind of, there are a lot of, in the space that I work in, there are a lot of, I'll call them fishy follows that don't make a lot of sense, that don't make me feel good, some that creep me out. And I've just gotten better at blocking. I've just gotten so much better at guilt-free blocking, and I just feel better. I feel better all the time. So I've recently spoken about window shopping and how we do not have to give people access to us if they are not serving us, if they are not in our lives the way that we want them to be. Why do we have to settle for them being in our lives the way that they want to be, which is minimally?
Yeah. It's the mutual, like this has to be, I'm not just providing entertainment for you if you're not going to have, if you're not going to be fully involved. It's that, the point that I loved about the episode, not only going, oh my gosh, I totally can relate. And there were a handful of people that were then deleted and blocked. So thank you. But it was the, what is the dynamic and is this mutually beneficial? So I just, that was one that recently I was just like, whoa, Shani, you nailed it on that one.
And how did you feel after you blocked them, and how have you felt since?
The initial validation that I got from not having them, there was a sense of the attention, like realizing that I like to know that at least they're still paying attention. So once that initially was like, no, you don't need that. Why are you doing that? Once that had burned off and I no longer kind of had that little hook, then it was just freeing to go, oh no, the people, if I scan the list of people who are viewing my content, these are all people that make me smile. Like it felt like connection rather than having to filter myself or, oh my goodness, what did he think saying that? Or even, I mean, even old coworkers that don't need to see what I'm up to. Just people from different chapters that I go, we're not in the same chapter, but then allowing that to go and there's no hard feelings. It's just, there's no need.
And I mean, attention is fine. Liking attention is a really human thing to feel. It's just that, like, get rid of the people who aren't giving you enough attention, who aren't giving you good, real, whole attention. Because when you get rid of those people, you make room in your brain to entertain the idea and make space for people who will give you the full kind of attention that you really want. I think that settling for attention from window shoppers is settling for scraps. And we're worth so much more than scraps. So it's totally okay, in my opinion, to crave attention. We all do. I mean, I write on the internet, for crying out loud. Like, you can't tell me I don't love attention. Like, come on.
Yeah.
But who is giving you that attention? And is it enough for you? Or is it just a little bit of a scrap? Because scraps are not enough for me, I got to tell you.
Yep. Nope. Final question for you. What is the best piece of career advice you have received or would offer to others?
Oh, man. That's a big one. I was thinking about that, and I don't know. There are so many things that I've learned. I would say pay attention to every professional setting that you're in and learn everything you can from everyone around you. We have a bad habit of having an antagonistic relationship between us and our boss or us and our coworkers. Everyone around you in the professional space is there to teach you something. Learn every single thing you possibly can from them. Even if you're dealing with a really difficult boss, approach your relationship with them as if they are a teacher. What are they teaching you? What can they teach you? And I've seen so many relationships in my life improve when I approach that person as a teacher, both, you know, for myself energetically, but also like overtly, like asking them to teach me things. It can really improve a dynamic. And also everybody around you in the professional space is a gift you've been given. You're not going to be together forever. This is not a marriage. You have a job and you're going to have many, many jobs throughout your life. So everyone that's around you right now, what are they there to teach you? And I don't just mean like hard skills within your space. I mean, I've had coworkers who are, you know, so different from me in so many ways. And they've taught me a variety of things. They've taught me when to speak up. They've taught me when to keep my mouth shut. They've taught me the right questions to ask, the wrong questions to ask. I've just learned so much from observing other people and interacting with other people. And I think we should see everyone around us in the professional space as a gift and figure out what can we learn from this experience and take it with us. That's a big one for me. And then I think anytime you have the ability to be kind when someone needs kindness in the professional space, do it. It will, in the moment, it will pay dividends to you in the form of just feeling really good, being able to help someone who needed help. And then I've also found that down the line, it'll just keep paying you back. So always lead with kindness when you can.
I love that so much. We need more of it in general. And mm-hmm. What a better place to start than when it's usually competitive or adversarial.
Yeah. I mean, also like, it sounds really saucy, but like quit your job. If it's adversarial and combative in the professional space, you're allowed to change jobs. You will always be allowed to change jobs if you are feeling inauthentic in that space, or if it's not where you feel good, if it's not where you feel productive, you don't have to stay somewhere that you don't want to be.
Oh man, so good. Choices.
Yeah.
Shani, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I just think you are fantastic, and your podcast is such, and all of your articles that I read are just such a bright light in a space. And I love that they highlight the joys, because there are many joys to being single, but just highlighting an experience that can feel under talked about, and highlighting the highs and the lows of it, but just creating that community and allowing people to be seen right where they are.
I am so glad you enjoy it. That makes my day to hear. It's a lot of work and we've all been very isolated this year. So hearing positive feedback is so appreciated. Thank you.
Another big thank you to Shani for your time and sharing with us today. I love Shani's solution to not seeing content or the narrative that she wanted around single life. And instead of complaining and wishing for it, she decided she would take things back and created what she would like to see. And I just find that so empowering and inspiring. I always love hearing from you. If you would like to send me an email, you can send it over to definingrolespodcast@gmail.com. Let me know your thoughts, if you have any guest suggestions, or anything you'd like to share. Also, you can jump over to Instagram and connect that way @definingroles. And it's always so wonderful to hear from you and see who's on the other side of the mic. That will do it for this week. Next time, I will have some exciting news to share. But until then, take good care of yourself, and I will catch you next time on another episode of Defining Roles.